You can find his work for USA Today. Go online, usatoday.com, follow on Twitter. Please use the handle at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, good to talk to you after a week's hiatus. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All is well. So we missed you last week. Somehow they allowed you out of the country. I looked. You landed in Lisbon. I got to tell you, I had to verify. I thought it was in Portugal. Terrell Owens was there. Apparently, so were 53,000 other people. What kind of event were you at? What kind of experience did you get over there?
Well, it was a fun experience. It's called Web Summit. It's a tech conference, and it's got a bunch of people from all over the world that come to it. It started out 5 or 6 years ago in Dublin, Ireland, with 250 people, and it's just grown and grown and grown. So it's pretty cool deal. And they added a sports track a couple of years ago, and somebody who wasn't really thinking said, "Hey, would you come over and moderate a couple of panels?" And so I did. And one of them was with Terrell Owens, which is why I tweeted a real random moment. It was just sort of weird that I realized I was in a cab with Terrell Owens. We were going to dinner, or actually leaving his hotel and going to the venue, I think is what it was. And I was in Lisbon, Portugal, and I thought, this is just really random and surreal.
it's a weird thing.
Yeah.
Now, I know you've covered the Olympics in China, but now that I've brushed up, that city has an amazing reputation, be it vibrance or progressive. You've been around a bit. I mean, you're talking about a major mainland city in Europe. So what did you think of it? I'd assume your first visit?
Oh, yeah, definitely my first visit. Pretty cool place. I mean, it had its very modern but very European vibe in some spots, like where the conference was. And then this wonderful kind of old city center that, you know, cobblestone streets, and it's built on these hills and these little narrow twisting corners and curves and fantastic buildings. So, you know, a great, great, fun place to visit. And I'd like to go back and have a little bit more time. It was really kind of a whirlwind trip. I was there about, I guess, a little more than 2.5 days, not quite 3.
Sounds amazing. Okay, now you're back here in the States with us. We got the selection committee rankings. A lot of complaining that it doesn't matter. It's made for TV. They just want to get us talking. And my take is, well, eyes wide open. It's ESPN. It's college football. It's as subjective of a sport as we follow. I mean, is it really that big a deal or a surprise that this is about generating attention, TV ratings, and a massive buildup?
Yeah, well, that's what it's about. I mean, look, I don't think that each individual vote and the way they rank them is about that. But the concept of having them do these supposedly meaningless, and I think they really are meaningless, rankings week after week after week when only the last one is supposed to mean anything, that's certainly meant to generate attention. Like I said, they're not trying to generate attention by, for example, having Michigan in the top 3 and Clemson still in the top 4 and ahead of Louisville and stuff like that. That's really how the committee sees those teams right now, as though the season ended Saturday. But the general viewpoint and approach is clearly to create conversation attention. And if controversy comes, that's not a bug in the system. That's a feature.
Well, as somebody who does talk radio, I kind of like that people want to talk. So we continue with George Schroeder, USA Today. Let's move to Baylor. The game before last, we all got to see these black T-shirts in support of their ex-coach, Art Briles. There were some assistants tweeting their support. I mean, we're not talking about improper benefits here. We're talking some vile crimes. You use the term tone deaf around the program. I mean, on its own, it's disturbing, considering Penn State is 4 or 5 years old. Does that make it even more disturbing that we're going down kind of this path again, or is just awful, awful?
Well, I mean, awful's awful. This is different in that the Penn State thing certainly appears to have been people in positions of power who knew about this sexual predator operating in and around the program for years and did nothing about it, probably to protect the Penn State football program. This is, you know, athletes over a period of time who apparently committed sexual and other kinds of assaults, and some of them weren't pursued the way they should have been pursued. And so you're not protecting one adult predator. You're sort of, but the commonality is you're protecting a program and or a school and its reputation at the expense of victims of horrible crimes. And so, you know, they're different, but they're similar in that regard. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I see. There's a connection. It's just not a duplicate, if that makes sense. It's just, again, what people are willing to put up with or overlook in the name of getting close to winning a conference or a national championship. And when you say that out loud, it's just kind of nauseating.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And it's just a bad, you know, it was a terrible thing that these things were going on and were unchecked. And, you know, however it happened, it's pretty clear there was a systemic problem. You know, and then the tone deafness comes from the continuing sort of missteps by people in and around the program, in and around the athletic department, in and around the school. I do think there are a lot of people that are trying to get it fixed, but there are a whole lot of people who think, hey, we fixed this. Let's go on about our business. And A, it's not completely fixed, and so they need to understand. And B, even to the extent they have fixed some things, they want everybody to just say, oh, okay, you fixed it. Well, it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while. And every time that you make a misstep in terms of, even if it's just in PR or optics, which is what some of these things are, people are going to immediately go back to all of the things and dump them all out there in the open. And so there's that going on, too. Specifically in the context of these assistant coaches, they kept their jobs in large part because, first of all, apparently none of them were actually named in the Pepper Hamilton report.
Right.
And they didn't, you know, when you fire Art Briles in early June or late May, if you actually plan to play football, and I realize there are a whole lot of critics who would just say, dump football. Well, that wasn't going to happen. It's easy to say. If you actually plan to play football, you can't basically dump the entire football staff at that time of year. And so they didn't. In retrospect, maybe they should have. But when they didn't, those guys, you know, they brought in Jim Grobe, who's a well-respected former head coach. He'd only been recently retired. And it's pretty clear that the assistant coaches who are all holdovers from the Art Briles staff have been at varying times insubordinate to him, and sometimes publicly so. And that's what that coordinated tweeted statement was, given that the interim head coach didn't know anything about it until it went out.
Yeah, it's just, like I said, it kind of goes around in a circle, and the word disturbing. How about we get to something a little more pleasant? The week before last, you wrote about Colorado. I've been kind of updating the math every week. This is a program that had four total Pac-12 wins, their first five seasons in the league. Now they've had six the past 7 weeks. Coach McIntyre inherited a train wreck, but like you wrote, his sales pitch to recruits, it wasn't complicated, it was honest, and he and his people certainly have earned this great ride.
Well, they have, and it's not a fluke either. They've got a talented team that's full of veterans, and these guys kind of came on board at a tough time and stuck with the program, and so that's a good piece of this. And so they're very, very experienced now. I don't know, I haven't really studied their roster to see if they'll take a real step back next year, but they might take a slight step back, but I think they've built the program solidly. You know, what are they, 8-2 now? They're going to finish up the regular season with two really tough games, Washington State and who am I missing?
The Utah game, yeah.
Right, and so they could easily be 8-4. But look, I'm kind of guessing they'll split it and go 9-3, and what a great season that's been for them, given how bad the program was when Mike McIntyre got there. So it's a really cool renaissance story, and I think Mike McIntyre is doing it the right way, which is kind of what makes it cooler.
Yeah, I mean, they went from a punching bag to a contender, it seemed like, in the blink of an eye. It was awesome. Talking college football with George Schroeder, USA Today. I sometimes think people forget Louisville is in the ACC, and they almost, it's like they get viewed differently. The Houston game tomorrow is not as big as it could have been. Obviously, they've got an electrifying player in Lamar Jackson, the only loss tight at Clemson. You think they can get in by winning out? Do they need one ahead of them, two ahead of them to lose? How could the Cardinals end up sneaking into this thing?
Well, they need, first of all, they do have to win out, but they need chaos. Here's what they need, all right? They need Michigan to win out, which is no sure thing. In fact, I don't think Michigan beats Ohio State, especially with Wilton Spate out with a broken collarbone now.
Right.
They need Michigan to win out and win the Big Ten in doing so. That will clear out Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Penn State from possibilities of getting into the playoff. And so in that case, you'd have Michigan in there. Now, I guess the easiest thing would be if Clemson would lose another game, and then Louisville could then have the division title and go win the ACC. But right. I don't think that's going to happen. So let's put Clemson, Alabama, and Michigan into the playoff. And then that last spot, they need for Washington to drop another game. And if that were to happen, the way I just described it, I think Louisville gets in. I think it's a real problem to see them getting in any other way. I just think it's hard. Look, everybody's all bedazzled by Lamar Jackson, and they should have been. But let's and look, they've played really well most of the year. But let's take a look back right now, step back and look at their resume. They have one win. It was very impressive, but one win over a team ranked right now in the CFP top 25, and that's Florida State.
Right, right.
They have one very quality loss, but it's a loss. Their resume does not stack up to, say, an Ohio State, which would be in a similar situation, potentially not winning its own division of its own conference. It doesn't stack up the same to Ohio State. It's not going to stack up to a one-loss conference champion. So they need some of that stuff to happen.
Yeah, I guess Charlotte, Marshall, and Kentucky on the non-conference outside of Houston not quite going to cut it. So assuming everybody's got Alabama at one now, or at least in the lone unbeaten among the Power Five, if you had a selection committee vote, and of course, it's only this week, who would have been your other three behind the Crimson Tide?
Well, we do, in fact, have a vote, the Football Four, which is USA Today's college football vertical. We do a playoff projection every week. We have 13 voters, several from our staff. And so my actual vote, believe it or not, the top four was exactly as the committee ended up doing it.
Okay.
It was, look, Alabama's is written in indelible ink at this point into the playoff, and that's if they lose. If they don't lose, they're written into indelible ink in number one. So it was. I had Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson in that order, which is the way the playoff committee came up with it. So it was nice to see they were right for once. And I'm kidding, of course. I had no idea what they would think, but that was just, so many teams lost that it was hard to see a giant shakeup coming. That's the thing. It's one thing when one team loses. And then the other thing is, although we've been conditioned in watching the polls to say, oh, you lost, you must drop down, the thing that we need to keep remembering, even though these are meaningless preliminary rankings from the playoff committee, is that they are supposed to pretend like they didn't have a poll last week. Thus, they're not really dropping someone or rising or having someone ascend. They're taking a look at the season through last Saturday as though it had ended on Saturday and as though they were doing a poll for the very first time, a ranking for the very first time, and let you tell me who the best teams in college football are, and that's how they're supposed to rank them. So that's what I tried to do, which sort of means you don't get all fired up about the fact, well, you lost to a 6-4 team and did this, that, or the other. Well, okay, but what's your overall body of work? And I'm going to pretend like I didn't vote last week, and that's what they're supposed to do. I don't know if human nature lets you do it, but that's the goal.
Yeah, that's kind of the theory of act like USC and Reggie Bush didn't exist in 2005, or if a judge tells a jury, ignore what you just heard. I don't know how valid that is either.
Well, but you could try to do it. I mean, if you just start with each one of these rankings, so next Tuesday when they come out with a ranking, recognize that they're pretending the season ended on Saturday.
Right.
And so they're trying to rank these teams based on an entire body of work all season long, not necessarily on what they did the most recent work they did, but all season long, how do I evaluate this team? You know?
Yeah.
So that's the deal there. I'm not sure that they're very consistent with it, but that's what they're trying to do.
All right. USAtoday.com online, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. George, great info as always. Always look forward to it. Enjoy the rest of the week and the weekend. We'll catch up with you next Wednesday.
Thanks, man. Glad to talk with you.
All right, take it easy.